Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to preview the questions. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. Choose the correct answer A, B, or C. Look at the questions, then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
To many, it is among the greatest public health achievements of our time, fluoridated water. But is it really the panacea for dental disease it's been portrayed as? A lot of discussion is going on about that right now. Brenda Morris reports.
Fluoride is added to public water supplies at an average concentration of about 0.7 part per million or slightly below. It works by binding to tooth enamel and makes the tooth more resistant to acid attack from bacteria. But some people are convinced that fluoridation is no more than adding a poison to the population's water supply. Dentist Craig Carter can tell us more.
Fluoride works in two ways. The first is that it protects teeth from demineralization caused by the acid produced when bacteria in the mouth combine with sugars. The second way, called remineralization, is accumulation of fluoride in demineralized areas, which strengthens the enamel. In the USA, water fluoridation was introduced in 1945, and today, almost 65% of the population receives fluoride in their drinking water. The idea behind it is that administering fluoride via the municipal water system ensures some level of preventative dental care will be available to everyone, regardless of socioeconomic status and whether a visit to the dentist is affordable. Its introduction has proved cost-effective for the healthcare system. Every dollar invested in adding fluoride to water saves about $38 in potential dental treatment costs per person annually. Despite this advantage, not everybody believes fluoride is good for the community. Opponents of fluoridation believe that it is an unethical form of mass medication without each individual's approval or knowledge. Another argument is that the dose cannot be controlled because each individual drinks different amounts of water.
What's more, people now receive fluoride from many other sources besides water. For starters, there's fluoride toothpaste, fluoride rinses, and professional fluoride treatments, not to mention food and beverages processed with fluoridated water. This can result in excess fluoride exposure, the most obvious health effect of which is dental fluorosis. Mild dental fluorosis includes white streaks on the teeth, while severe cases can include brown stains, pits, and broken enamel. Chronic intake of excessive fluoride can lead to the severe bone and joint deformations of skeletal fluorosis, early symptoms of which include sporadic pain and stiffness of joints. Whether dental or skeletal fluorosis is irreversible and untreatable.
In the most comprehensive dental health report published by the National Research Council, fluoridation was found to protect less than 1% of the total tooth surfaces in a child's mouth. The report also pointed out that the upper limit for fluoride, at 4 parts per million, was too high to prevent a certain percentage of kids from developing severe dental fluorosis and recommended the United States Environmental Protection Agency lower this limit. Today, water is fluoridated in 29 of the 30 largest cities in the USA, with the exception of Portland, Oregon, a city that has voted against fluoridation four times since 1956.
It seems that people will continue to contentiously debate fluoridation for years to come. Whatever the outcome of the debate, it is certain the fluoride intake should be kept within safe limits.
Now you will hear the segment again.
To many, it is among the greatest public health achievements of our time, fluoridated water. But is it really the panacea for dental disease it's been portrayed as? A lot of discussion is going on about that right now. Brenda Morris reports.
Fluoride is added to public water supplies at an average concentration of about 0.7 part per million or slightly below. It works by binding to tooth enamel and makes the tooth more resistant to acid attack from bacteria. But some people are convinced that fluoridation is no more than adding a poison to the population's water supply. Dentist Craig Carter can tell us more.
Fluoride works in two ways. The first is that it protects teeth from demineralization caused by the acid produced when bacteria in the mouth combine with sugars. The second way, called remineralization, is accumulation of fluoride in demineralized areas, which strengthens the enamel. In the USA, water fluoridation was introduced in 1945, and today, almost 65% of the population receives fluoride in their drinking water. The idea behind it is that administering fluoride via the municipal water system ensures some level of preventative dental care will be available to everyone, regardless of socioeconomic status and whether a visit to the dentist is affordable. Its introduction has proved cost-effective for the healthcare system. Every dollar invested in adding fluoride to water saves about $38 in potential dental treatment costs per person annually. Despite this advantage, not everybody believes fluoride is good for the community. Opponents of fluoridation believe that it is an unethical form of mass medication without each individual's approval or knowledge. Another argument is that the dose cannot be controlled because each individual drinks different amounts of water.
What's more, people now receive fluoride from many other sources besides water. For starters, there's fluoride toothpaste, fluoride rinses, and professional fluoride treatments, not to mention food and beverages processed with fluoridated water. This can result in excess fluoride exposure, the most obvious health effect of which is dental fluorosis. Mild dental fluorosis includes white streaks on the teeth, while severe cases can include brown stains, pits, and broken enamel. Chronic intake of excessive fluoride can lead to the severe bone and joint deformations of skeletal fluorosis, early symptoms of which include sporadic pain and stiffness of joints. Whether dental or skeletal fluorosis is irreversible and untreatable.
In the most comprehensive dental health report published by the National Research Council, fluoridation was found to protect less than 1% of the total tooth surfaces in a child's mouth. The report also pointed out that the upper limit for fluoride at 4 parts per million was too high to prevent a certain percentage of kids from developing severe dental fluorosis and recommended the United States Environmental Protection Agency lower this limit. Today, water is fluoridated in 29 of the 30 largest cities in the USA, with the exception of Portland, Oregon, a city that has voted against fluoridation four times since 1956.
It seems that people will continue to contentiously debate fluoridation for years to come. Whatever the outcome of the debate, it is certain the fluoride intake should be kept within safe limits.
Number 39. When does demineralization occur? Number 40. What's the rationale behind the American government implementing fluoridation? Number 41. According to opponents of fluoridation, why is the process unethical? Number 42. What is dental fluorosis? Number 43. What's the worst thing about dental or skeletal fluorosis? Number 44. Why did the report recommend that the upper limit for fluoride be lowered? Look at the questions, then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
You've probably listened to a classic album or watched a classic movie lately and been amazed at the quality of the audio or picture. But a few years ago, this wouldn't have been possible. Now, with digital technology, we are able to restore oldies but goodies to their original grandeur. Liz Hunton reports.
We have here with us mastering engineer Timothy Miller to talk about the technology behind producing remastered CDs and DVDs, which promise consumers crystal clear, artistically faithful reproductions of their favorite music and films. Timothy, what can you tell us about this technology?
Let me start by explaining why we use the terms mastering and remastering. The master is the final version of each track to be copied and printed on millions of CDs. It is created by a recording engineer whose job is to faithfully record every instrument and vocal track and produce the clearest sound possible. He tries to do so with minimal signal processing, which in recording terminology is any kind of compression, distortion, or other effects that alter the sound of the recording. The mixing engineer, the person responsible for assembling the final mix, takes over and tweaks the volume, stereo pan, and other settings of each separate instrument and vocal track in the song to achieve a balanced, satisfying whole. The next person to come in the process is the mastering engineer. His job is called finishing, because this is where each song on a CD receives the final adjustments that make it sound great. To achieve that, he uses a palette of software tools to sweeten the sound of each song. Assembling the tracks in the desired order is also a mastering engineer's duty. Track order influences the overall flow of the CD because it will affect how each song is sonically balanced with those that come before and after it.
And as the word suggests, is remastering simply the process of taking an existing album and mastering it again?
Quite right. And it's usually reserved for box sets of a band's greatest hits or other special releases. The word has taken on a highly promotional significance, used to resell existing music to consumers with the promise of sharper sound clarity and even a totally new sound. DVDs are remastered for many of the same reasons. The idea is to use modern digital editing technology to create the cleanest, most artistically authentic print of an existing movie. The editors go back to the original film stock and use special editing software to remove dust, fix damaged frames, improve color balance, and greatly improve the clarity and quality of the audio. These remastered DVDs are often reissued on high-definition discs and with extras like behind-the-scenes documentaries and filmmaker interviews. So it seems remastering is an excellent way to breathe new life into an old product. The only occasional complaint expressed by listeners is that the music becomes blisteringly loud from start to finish. And after listening to a couple of songs in a row, listeners get tired of trying to listen for sonic details or the clear sounds of different instruments that just aren't there anymore.
A small price to pay if we are to enjoy classic music and movies, which would otherwise have become ancient history.
Now you will hear the segment again.
You've probably listened to a classic album or watched a classic movie lately and been amazed at the quality of the audio or picture. But a few years ago, this wouldn't have been possible. Now, with digital technology, we are able to restore oldies but goodies to their original grandeur. Liz Hunton reports.
We have here with us mastering engineer Timothy Miller to talk about the technology behind producing remastered CDs and DVDs, which promise consumers crystal clear, artistically faithful reproductions of their favorite music and films. Timothy, what can you tell us about this technology?
Let me start by explaining why we use the terms mastering and remastering. The master is the final version of each track to be copied and printed on millions of CDs. It is created by a recording engineer whose job is to faithfully record every instrument and vocal track and produce the clearest sound possible. He tries to do so with minimal signal processing, which in recording terminology is any kind of compression, distortion, or other effects that alter the sound of the recording. The mixing engineer, the person responsible for assembling the final mix, takes over and tweaks the volume, stereo pan, and other settings of each separate instrument and vocal track in the song to achieve a balanced, satisfying whole. The next person to come in the process is the mastering engineer. His job is called finishing, because this is where each song on a CD receives the final adjustments that make it sound great. To achieve that, he uses a palette of software tools to sweeten the sound of each song. Assembling the tracks in the desired order is also a mastering engineer's duty. Track order influences the overall flow of the CD because it will affect how each song is sonically balanced with those that come before and after it.
And as the word suggests, is remastering simply the process of taking an existing album and mastering it again?
Quite right. And it's usually reserved for box sets of a band's greatest hits or other special releases. The word has taken on a highly promotional significance, used to resell existing music to consumers with the promise of sharper sound clarity and even a totally new sound. DVDs are remastered for many of the same reasons. The idea is to use modern digital editing technology to create the cleanest, most artistically authentic print of an existing movie. The editors go back to the original film stock and use special editing software to remove dust, fix damaged frames, improve color balance, and greatly improve the clarity and quality of the audio. These remastered DVDs are often reissued on high-definition discs and with extras like behind-the-scenes documentaries and filmmaker interviews. So it seems remastering is an excellent way to breathe new life into an old product. The only occasional complaint expressed by listeners is that the music becomes blisteringly loud from start to finish. And after listening to a couple of songs in a row, listeners get tired of trying to listen for sonic details or the clear sounds of different instruments that just aren't there anymore.
A small price to pay if we are to enjoy classic music and movies, which would otherwise have become ancient history.
Number 45. What is the report mainly about? Number 46. What's the primary aim of a recording engineer? Number 47. Who is responsible for arranging the songs in a harmonious sequence? Number 48. What are the implications of the term remastering? Number 49. Which of the following is not involved in remastering a DVD? Number 50. What is not true about remastered CDs? End of the listening test.